Hello, my name is Eunice Skeet and welcome to this fortnight's episode of the PD Podcast. The PD Podcast stands for the Personal Development Podcast and is part of the wider student set up and run PD project. This consists of this podcast you're listening to today and the PD Post, which is a blog platform. Both are bringing you everything to do with personal development and productivity from a student's perspective. So today's episode of the PD Podcast is going to be on personal finances. And I'm joined with three other people for the first time. Just a few of my mates I know too from my course. So introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Veer. I do engineering with Eunice.
I'm Marley. I study law.
I'm Jem. I do engineering with Eunice.
Yeah, so Marley was on last fortnight's episode of the PD Podcast, which was on the personal development mindset. I enjoyed that episode quite a bit, so everyone definitely check that out. That will be at www.pdproject.co.uk/PD Podcast/3. But today, yes, we're going to kick things off. The inspiration for this episode was, again, the YouTube channel I've been talking about, Matt Diavella. And he has a video called A Minimalist's Approach to Finance. And I think he raised some really interesting topics. And the one I think that stuck with me the most was how to view commodities and how to view spending. And one of the quotes he had is, "What you don't deserve is to treat yourself to that new pair of shoes or to that new jacket or to that new tracksuit." What you deserve is financial freedom. What you deserve is to not be in debt. And I feel like marketing is so successful at glamorizing things, at telling you, "Oh, Marley, you've worked so hard. Oh, you've saved up for so long. Now indulge yourself on half price sneakers." Yeah, you deserve it. But I think what really resonated with me is, yeah, maybe I deserve it, but what I deserve more is to have £100 in my wallet at the end of the week, is to have potentially 10 grand in my bank account more in 20 years. What I deserve is financial freedom. And that's informed the latest turn of my personal finances. But I know, Marley, you don't necessarily always agree with that viewpoint.
Well, we're not going to subscribe completely to the live fast, die young mentality, but I don't agree with you because I think, you know, there has to be enjoyment to life.
Definitely.
And I think it comes into balancing your financial freedom with enjoying life. I mean, if that's what you like to do, if you think that's a more worthier pursuit in your life than enjoying trivial, you know, matters such as buying a tracksuit or going out and splashing out at Nando's. I mean, just going out of Nando's, you bought one of the most cheapest items on the menu. And I suppose, yeah, compared to me, you bought, you know, two chicken legs, bought a little cheeky side. We just, you know, saw like kind of difference in our mindsets.
I think, yeah, difference in our mindsets. I wouldn't say I would always be jumping on this, "You don't deserve this now, you deserve more money" bandwagon. I think what the personal development project is about balance. And I think striking the correct balance is something we all have to learn to do with our personal finances at uni. Something I don't quite think I did last year, but I think I'm reeling it in a bit this year. And obviously, I think the way I see money is an enabler and is an enricher. So I'm not going to keep all of my money to myself and not enrich my day-to-day by going out for Nando's with you, for example. But similarly, I want to stockpile money so that I can finance those big enrichments, like hopefully a better house down the line, or not spend the next 20, 30 years of my life worrying about money. And part of the way I can do that is by just making small changes, not buying another t-shirt, another top, another jacket for the next 10 years, and hopefully I'll reap the benefit of that further down the line.
I think it's quite clear that there is, like most things in life now, there's a spectrum, and that some people would think, you know, I need to live my life while I'm still here. Other people would be like, I need to save, because what if a rainy day comes by? What if suddenly my roof falls down in my house and I need to save, fix it? And having like the ability to absorb impacts like that is something people value more than others. But yes, I think it's something that we just go bear in mind, that people come from different backgrounds, different mindsets as to where they lie on the spectrum of living life or saving money and taking care of it.
What you think you deserve is subjective as well. So it's like, some people would want to, some people would feel like, they deserve, as you said, you deserve to have more money by the end of the week, or, you know, 10 grand by the end of the year. But then, like,
hopefully,
other people...
10 grand by the end of the year, I'd love that.
But then it's like, other people would like, for me personally, like, I don't know, if I've had a really tough week, I'd say, you know, I deserve a good, like, weekend, you know, I'm going to spend a lot, go out, have a good time with my friends, stuff like that. And it's like, it's very subjective and opinionated. You know?
I think, what we're all striving towards is for money to be an enabler and an enricher, rather, as I said, rather than an oppressor.
It's weird because it's weird when you think about it, though, because it's like, you know, you deserve to spend it on yourself and treat yourself at the end of the day.
I think,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, one of the situations I'm trying to put myself in is finding a comfortable level of spending, finding a comfortable level of living, and staying that way for the next few years, because hopefully over the next 5-10 years, my income is going to increase drastically. Right now, I'm getting poorer every day. Hopefully, there's a job lined up for me, and I want to get richer. And another one of the things that was mentioned in the video, we will link this video down in the show notes, is lifestyles creep. And I've battled that, juggling a term time job along with my studies. And it's sort of the idea that as soon as more money comes in, we view it as there's more money to spend. And one of the things I think I'm going to try and do is reach a point where I'm like, right, Eunice, this is your spending patterns. This is how much you spend here. This is what you do. And it doesn't matter if it's payday. Doesn't matter if I didn't spend last week or last month. I want that consistency. I want that platform to build upon. And that jumps me into another point I wanted, knowing when you're most vulnerable. Payday. Pay week. It's an awful time financially for most students because, as you say, this sum of money comes in and we see it as I have so much more money to spend. And I've struggled with that. Marley, I don't know if you'd want to share. You've had similar experiences. So just talk to me about how you view that, because I'm not trying to propose that the way I view things or the way I treat my money is a correct way for anyone but myself.
Okay, so coming into university last year, for most people, most students, that's the largest sum of money that you've come into your account without you actively working for it. So you kind of see it as, free money basically, and especially with the fact that you've mentioned that it's a tax rather than a...
The student debt, the way it's set up is more forgiving, I think, than most debts will come across. It is effectively a tax, an income-dependent tax. Yeah.
So sadly, I got into the mindset of pay now, think later, and I ended up making some real regrettable decisions, which I think for most students, those decisions you make when you're financially naive impact you years later when you've acquired more financial knowledge. And to, you know, any potential students out there listening now, I'd say finances is the most important aspect of your student life, I'd say, because it can really impact your mental health to the extent which you're not getting as much out of your degree as you could. So I do agree with you in that sense that students do need to be more on that saving kind of mindset.
Save some today for
a rainy day kind of.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Because I think the situation we're all trying to avoid is to have a long-term negative relationship with money. because money can be one of the most crippling things in modern day life. And today, we feel great when we get that new student loan coming, and we feel great when we spend. But that might not always be the case, depending on how our financial situations are looking like.
Yeah.
10, 20 years down the line, it may hurt to spend that £10 on a Nando's with you, Marley, because I haven't seen you in 6 months. And I think that's what we're all trying to avoid.
It's difficult. Like, when I last year, I had retakes, obviously, from first year over the summer. And in the summer, for the first half, I had a job. And I worked really hard. I made £1,000 in a month just working really hard. I spent half of it on my rent, my deposit for my first rent for second year, and the other half on studio. So by the end of summer, I was completely broke. And there was one point where I had the retake. So I had to be in Bristol for, let's say, a week and a half by myself, because I had no money to spend on anything, you know. The best I'll do is, like, I'd go to Domino's and they had like a £6 large pizza deal a day for 1 week. So like, I'd just go to Domino's like every day for dinner. That'd be my only food for the whole day, was Domino's.
Do you think £6 a day is enough to feed you?
That's well,
because if
how did you feed yourself?
Yeah. That was all I had. So I'd go study all day, come back and have a large Domino's pizza for dinner for £6, and that's like 2,800 calories. So I thought that'd be enough, like, to support myself. But I don't know, like, at that point, I realised how scary it would be to just be broke or, like, not have the money to support yourself and, God forbid, other people in your family or just, like, people you care for, you know? As in, like, when people say money can't buy happiness, but in a way, it can, if you know what I mean. Like,
it really can help to keep sadness at bay.
It's a catalyst for happiness, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And what, to get out of that situation, did you end up borrowing money or?
No, I just literally, the student loan came in the week after.
The student loan always says.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean. That's another point I'd like to make. We're lucky we're students.
Yeah.
You know, if you were a different age and you're not in university,
yeah,
I don't know what would have happened for you if you were in that situation.
Yeah, we're kind of like an incubation period where we can mess up once or twice.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, I guess the habits we make now are what's going to like project us throughout life.
Yeah.
It's difficult, like very difficult.
Because I think a lot of the freedoms we have is because we have that fail-safe of student loan. Yeah. And in a sense, it's nice to get comfortable with that. But I think once you have that fail-safe, you need to prepare for when you don't, which is what I've been doing. Another thing, small point I'd like to make is different types of debt. Owing my friends money, owing my family money is something I've always hated. And I think this is because my personal family situation, my mum has owed some form of debt for quite a while that she's been paying off. So the whole concept of owing someone money is something I'm not comfortable with. And that means I'll never accept even a fiver from a friend. I'd rather live within my own means, and if I can't do something, I won't, and I'll leave it. And also, religiously, interest is something that I should be avoiding pretty much at all costs. So personally, when I graduate, I'm going to spend hopefully the next 2 or 3 years paying off my student debts as quickly as possible. But I know that's not the case for a lot of people, so I'll just ask, how do you guys sort of view debts, sort of view owing people or organisations or the government money?
Well, for me, as long as there's not a, you know, a substantial impact that can be personally felt through you having that debt, I don't pay much attention to it. I don't think that's the right mindset to have, but that's the way I certainly think, especially with a student loan. You're hearing all these stories of people not paying it off. It's not going to motivate you to, you know, pay off as quickly as possible. That's just me anyway.
Would you not feel like a sense of relief to not be tied down to the debt still, to not have it overhanging? Because I'm sort of thinking, regardless of the religious obligation to pay off my debts, I wouldn't want, when I'm taking out a mortgage, to have to think, oh, have I factored in my student loan repayments, which can get up to hundreds of pounds a month, which is not what I want to be worrying about when I've been out of uni for 20 years. Sort of out of sight, out of mind is how I want to view a lot of my finances.
Well, the fact you mentioned it as a tax, you don't think of taxes that way, do you?
Well, I know, well, that's the mindset I have, is that when, if you ever get a paycheck, the first thing that comes to my mind is, how much of this am I going to actually keep?
Yeah.
And I guess that's the mindset I have, is that if it is a tax, I do factor it in. It's like, okay, yeah, great, I've been given, I've never been paid this much, but 50,000, and I don't know how much gets taken out as tax, but I'm be like, okay, 40, I'll only have like 40,000 left after this. And I think that's where I differ a little bit compared to you, Marley. It's just the fact that thinking, it's the way you think of debt and money and tax that also affects how you live your lifestyle, like, yeah, or how you like spend your money. And being able to realize before you have to pay something that this is already, I don't already have this money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the right mindset to have.
The amount of times I've had to tell myself, Eunice, this isn't your money. You haven't worked yet. This is the government's money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps. That helps a lot.
That's very long term.
It gets harder as you get older as well. When like debt, like
this idea I've heard of, it's called onset gratification. I think that's what it's called. I'm not completely certain. It's this idea that do work hard now so you can enjoy later.
Mm.
So it goes with school or uni or anything really. If you put in the hours now, if you go to the library and all that, you'll be able to like chill out a little bit. Exam time, you'll be stressed. Or you put in the hours now, get your first, your job will come, you'll get a better job and you'll enjoy life a bit more. And I think the same can be applied to debt and everything. I get debt is a bit more negative, right? Yeah. It's not all about hard work, it's more about avoiding it, sort of. But you're right, if you can foresee it and think ahead and be like, you know what, this is going to come and bite me later.
Yeah.
This idea of onset gratification, like work now, try and save now, can really put you like a step ahead of...
Yeah.
Debt. And like, I mean, I guess if you like personify it, it's not chasing you down as much.
Yeah, and it's like a sense of achievement when you're doing that as well, you know, when you know, like, I don't know, like when I'm doing a Deliveroo to save up for like stuff that I want, like personal finances, I've cycling past people who are like going out on nights out drunk out of their minds, and I'm like, you know, damn, and they look like they're having a great time, like, damn, I wish I could be doing that. But at the same time, I feel happier because I know that I'm making money to pursue a dream that I want, and like it's going to help me in the long term, you know?
Yeah. Long term gratification.
So I feel better when I'm working and grinding for something that I want than if I'm out just, you know.
So you're a very interesting case, and I respect you a lot, because so for those of you that don't know, Jem is rapping and currently working on music right now. And with that, in order to get good quality music, you have to go to studios. So Jem's saving up to go to a studio, and one thing that I really, really respect about him is that it's something he loves to do. It's something that he's not necessarily getting an income from. In fact, if anything, it's draining his bank account.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it's something he enjoys to do, and he's willing to put the work in.
Yeah, read that.
And like, it's like when you're a kid, and like let's say you wanted to play a new sport, mummy and daddy would often like be like, okay, we can like help you a little bit with it.
Mm.
But at some point you have to learn that they're not going to be there to do that. And what Jem's done is a very mature thing. He's just decided, I want to go to studio, I want to make music, and I'm going to grind till I get that by any means necessary. He doesn't even have a Deliveroo account. He's just like, he's just using his mate's one, but he's doing whatever he can. And I think that's a habit that I know I can learn from quite a lot.
It's just like, when you have like a dream or something that you really want to pursue, and you know there's going to be problems such as debt in the future when you're trying to like pursue it and follow it, like it just drives you more, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, talking a bit more about your part-time job, your Deliveroo.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to talk about is tying money into careers, tying money into effort that I put in and the value that I bring. Mm. One of the conclusions I've come to in not having a proper term-time job this far... is I'm valuable. I'm hopefully developing into an incredibly employable person. And with certain types of jobs, I'd want that to be recognised. So I wouldn't want to be on the lowest possible salary, treated like a number or a figure or just any other employee. So potentially a job like Deliveroo wouldn't be suited to me or wouldn't motivate me enough. just because I view the time that I put in as intrinsically valuable. And if it's not, if that value isn't being recognised or it's not going to the right courses, that's not the path for me. How does that sit with you?
I feel like, I guess for me, my idea of being valuable is that you need to kind of work to get to the position of becoming valuable. Mm. You have to start somewhere.
Mm.
Well, like, let's just think of examples, like people who'd had like terrible jobs, they had to put themselves through things that would make you feel like nothing, you know, to get to be something.
So I agree with you, and I know, like,
Eunice, I know where you're coming from though, Eunice.
Yeah, like it makes sense, but also there is a case to say that you can't necessarily be not a number or be doing something without having to go through a graft.
Yeah.
I know people who are like, for example, think about like the big firms, Ernst & Young, Deloitte, all these like big banking firms or whatever, audit firms, the graduates they get, like the graduates are working hard, and it almost seems like they, like I know people who felt like, look, I'm smart in this, I don't need to just be plugging numbers into a computer. These are graduates, but there is a case to say that you have to do that to get to the
top. You have to do your time.
You have to, yeah, you have to do the grind that you might be smarter than. And trust me, like, one of the worst things is doing a job you know you're completely capable of doing, and like, it's, I hate to say it, but like, you feel like it's beneath you.
Yeah.
And I think with Deliveroo and stuff is that it's the flexibility of it. I know it's a bit of an odd case. Flexibility, and you can just like 0 hours and work whenever you want. And I feel for you, you're not thinking of it as like a career thing, Jem. You're thinking of it just, you know, as a means to do something else, right? Yeah. It's an enabler.
And like, yeah, you need to put yourself in positions where you feel like you aren't valuable, yeah, to eventually become valuable. Like,
and I think to teach you a bit of your own self-worth.
Like, for example.
Because once you're in a position, say, I got rejected from every summer job. I got rejected from Aldi, Domino's, Waitrose, everywhere. And I knew I was a good enough candidate to thrive.
Is this for like an internship or
summer jobs?
So like stacking shelves.
Stacking shelves.
Okay.
So yeah. What does that say about me? I'm not actually too sure.
Maybe you're not actually as valuable as you think you are. Because they would have offered you a job.
Maybe you need to prove your valuability.
Yeah.
Could be overqualified, and a lot of families do not want to.
It's true. A lot of places are looking for convenience. They're looking, are you going to shoot back off to uni in 3 months?
Exactly.
So how much value are you if we're going to have to retrain someone else?
Spend the money,
but
it's a cop-out, though, I think. University students, a lot of people say that, oh, I'm too qualified, I'm doing a law degree.
I think it's true though, because these places aren't always looking for education, they're not always looking for employability skills which will benefit you in a long-term career. Sometimes if a square fits through the square hole, it's good enough. And it doesn't matter if you're a gold square, it doesn't matter how embellished you are, if you fit through the hole, you're good enough. But I think potentially putting yourself in those situations where you feel underappreciated is where you can get to some self-worth. And trust me, I would have stacked shelves for Waitrose if I could have, because it's money and because it's a means to something better.
Mm.
But I think just being denied that, the place I'm at now is sort of thinking, okay, moving forwards, the next proper job I have is probably going to be the start of my career. I want to be valued.
Mm.
I want to be doing something valuable, and I want to be appreciated and not seen as just a shelf stacker.
Yeah, so with going along with value, this valuability of a person in a workplace, is that, do you also feel like there's like two parts, I think, when I'm considering jobs and stuff, there's two parts to it. One is the salary, which is like why anyone ever works, really. The other is what you can learn and what you gain from it. That's not monetary. So, for example, I've worked in engineering companies before, and I was not getting paid too much. I was getting paid like a fair play, bearing in mind I hadn't gone to university yet. I was still at school. But I was learning a lot, and I was getting help from people that I like were senior to me. And like I was developing my skills.
Yeah.
I think that was more valuable than the monetary stuff that I got. Do you feel that's a measure of how valuable you are, is in terms of how well the company treats you and teaches you? Do you think that makes you feel more valuable if they're putting in the effort to teach you and stuff?
Definitely. Definitely, because you invest in worthy investments. And if a company is going to take me on and invest in training me, it feeds into my sense of self-worth.
What if a company were to take you on, offer you a large salary, but then put a number on you in the same way? Like, okay, it's a bit weird. It's like a weird one because it's very unlikely. It's very hypothetical.
Mm.
But if a company were to say, here, we're going to give you 100K a year. You're a graduate, 100K a year. All I want you to do is look at all these numbers, and you might be like skilled at one particular thing. Find this and then just put it in this shoot. Here's your cubicle. Here you go. Graft out.
I don't think I'll be too comfortable doing that. Because the primary motivator for me and my work isn't money. The primary motivator is... the value I'm giving to society and the value I'm giving to the company.
So you just don't, you don't want to limit yourself and your capabilities, because basically.
I think this segues nicely into a point I wanted to make about looking back to my school friends.
Mm.
A lot of my school friends, almost all of my school friends are on economics degrees or are looking to go into the city and to go into finances. And I met up with them over Christmas, and you just get the impression, I am going to be by far the poorest person in my friendship groups in 10, 15 years. And going back from that, I felt a bit conscious. I felt like, oh, maybe I made a mistake. Maybe I should go into the city. Maybe I should be making more money. But for me, my career isn't about making money. Hence, I've done some of the most enriching experience I've got has been volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I'm not viewing that as, oh, I'm giving too much value to society to not be paid here.
Yeah.
It's the value I'm giving to society is remuneration enough.
Yeah.
So for me, I think it's more about what I'm doing. In engineering, I see this as a key to make everyone's life better.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pay me 20 grand doing that, or 40 grand balancing books, or ticking something off, or just doing menial tasks, I'll take the 20 grand any day.
So, sorry, Jem, just it's worth clarifying to the listeners that that Eunice is talking about, when he's talking about his school friends, he's talking about his friends who have got their eyes set on becoming big city, like office workers, bankers, businessmen, whereas Eunice, your mindset's more sort of something else, not necessarily just heads down on that route, tunnel visioned it that way.
Yeah, I was going to say that, like, the thought of helping others with the money that you make is a big driving force as well. Yeah. I think it's a bigger driving force than thinking about the money you could potentially make too.
Do you mean in a sense that the money almost better in my pockets because I can do good with it, and it won't necessarily go to good causes in someone else's pockets?
Kind of. I mean, like, when I was thinking about music in the summer and I was working hard and I went to the studio and I recorded it, I was like, I don't know, I just started thinking about my whole life. If I was to go down this music path and I was to make tons of money and I was, you know, to have a big house, 5-10 cars, I don't know, and being famous, I genuinely thought, you know, like, I would be happy at first, but would I remain happy like this? And I got really depressed over the summer because I was thinking about, do I actually want to be this person? Do I actually want to go out and pursue this and lead a life that I might not actually want? Then I thought about the fact that if I make all of this money, I don't necessarily have to go out and buy a mansion and 5 or 10 cars. I'm going to come back home and I'm going to put it back into my community, and I'm going to, like, I want to open up like a school, but not like a standard school, probably like an after school thing where like kids can come in and they can learn about things they probably wouldn't be able to learn about in school, like producing or just anything, you know. It could even be like science and maths related too. Just a place where people can go and get education where you know, you'd have to usually pay for it in like private schools and stuff, but kids with no money can go and do that. You know, I'd like to be able to use my money to give back to the community.
Definitely.
And when I thought about that, that actually drove me on more to work on music. That really made me want to pursue it more. It motivates you when you think about the fact that, like, you know, it's not all for me. There's something else out there for other people, and I would leave some sort of an impact as well.
That's one of the things, a conclusion I've sort of come to with money, because I view money as an enabler, as I said at the start of the video, and money doesn't enable sitting in a bank account, doubling every year.
Yeah.
Money is meant to be fed back into society to enrich people's experiences with life.
Yeah.
And that's where, moralistically, I think certain city jobs are incompatible with me, because I've sort of come to the conclusion that they're driving money out of the pockets of people that need it more to stockpile it and to sit it there and just grow, basically.
Yeah.
Because also now a lot of companies have they've lost trust in people in a little way. Like they, so they're now more inclined to stockpile it. It's not they're not doing it with a malicious intent. They're doing it with like purely a business intent. And as you said, it's not very good for people.
So tying it back a bit to the present day, Veer, you wanted to talk about
like needs and wants.
Needs and wants.
Yeah. So I feel like a lot of people often spend money on things they want and not so much on things they need. That's not to say everyone does that. However, there is a case to say that by prioritizing what you spend your money on can actually give you like a long-term stability and this ability to absorb when things go wrong. So like a classic case is like, it's a case my dad told me and it sort of stuck with me. Is that like a Boots meal? They'll cost about £3.50 or £3.30, and if you're buying one of those every weekday, that's going to cost you what? So it's 365 days. About 5/7 of that was about 300 days. 300 times 350. Let's just say that's like a grand a year on just lunches. And literally all a Boots meal deal is one drink, a sandwich, and maybe a packet of crisps. You can buy that. You can buy it in wholesale at Sainsbury's, get the drink, maybe just have water instead of that, or just get an orange juice or squash or something from Sainsbury's, like a big bottle, and bread is really cheap, and vegetables and whatever you put in your sandwich. I don't know much. It'll cost maybe £150 total for the entire meal deal if you made it on your own. That is a grand. And £150 is half of about £3, so you could be saving yourself about £500, even though it just seems like a minute change. £500 over a year, that could be something like, I don't know, for Jem, for example, that could be a couple of studio sessions, would you say? It's just like little changes in life that people often overlook that can really, really like help you in the long term, even though in day to day, you might think, oh yeah, it's just £3, it's just £1.50 more. It does add up, and often people just forget that. It's just a point I think it's worth mentioning.
Yeah, sort of thinking from the baseline, from the most basic that ticks the boxes, is this extra investment really enriching my life
anymore? Yeah, like do I need this?
Is it adding value today, or would the money being in my bank account in 10 years' time be more valuable to me? So Marley, you had one last point, I think, potentially to wrap up this episode.
Just going on from your like points everyone else has made about enjoyment, like, you know, my parents have been very, say, angry at me because I've only had one proper part-time job, like, in my life. A lot of people have had, you know, grinding the whole summer, as you said, to your deposit, grinding. I can't relate to that because I've always felt that unless I'm enjoying what I'm doing, I'd rather sit there and starve. metaphorically.
Yeah,
okay. Like, then do something I don't enjoy.
Yeah.
So, it's been a long journey in terms of my music career, but it's starting to see I'm making quite a bit of money, you know, compared to most people's part-time jobs from bookings and stuff. And I felt it kind of angers most people, I think. You say, I make this amount of money an hour. You know, I'm making like double what most people make an hour from stacking shelves. And most people are looking at you, oh, you're lazy. How can you be bragging? And that's something I've had to kind of deal with because they're not doing something they enjoy. Well, I'm doing something I enjoy. But a lot of people can't see like the blood, sweat and tears I've had to put into this to be able to get to that point.
Yeah.
Like, I can completely relate to your story. You know,
that's respectable.
Deliveroo, grinding, just for studio time. I can relate to that. Love.
It ties back well into this period where you just have to graft out,
even
though you think it's like meaningless. You don't feel valued, but it does often lead. In which cases, if you play your cards right, it can often lead to something very big, like your case, for example.
I mean, exactly. If I think about it, I've probably lost more money pursuing what I want than, you know, what I've actually gained from it. But I'm enjoying what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm not getting an income from it. It might not be the greatest income as compared to, like, Eunice talking about his city friends. You know, it might not be, even compared to my, like, people on my course, like, I'm studying law. if you play your cards right, yeah, you could be earning big, big, big money. If I played my cards right, yeah, I could be sitting on 100 grand by the time I'm 30, but it's not something I particularly want to do. And I'd rather sit here, grind away for something I feel is enjoyable than, you know.
I think that's more respectable than doing an office job for 2-3 years that you don't enjoy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're going to spend, what, 50% of your time, well, not 50, but like 30% of your entire life working. Might as well be something you enjoy.
So work carries you home, you know, for most people. Yeah.
It's very rare to love what you do and make a good salary out of it.
Yeah.
As I say, love what you do and you don't have to work a day in your life.
Yeah.
Okay, listeners, that concludes this fortnight's episode on personal finances. Stay tuned next week for... We're talking for episode 5 on progressive extremism, which is basically just looking at small steps you can make to achieve those much larger goals. So today's episode is available along with the PD post at www.pdproject.co.uk. It has been your host, Eunice Skeet. See you in 2 weeks' time. It's a different kind of pain, it's a different kind of pain. Crafting your happiness, crafting your happiness. It's a different kind of pain, it's a different kind of pain. Crafting your happiness, crafting your happiness. Smiling with a passive brain.